Welcome to the Shutdown Full Cast. That's right, it's the internet's only college football podcast. Last one standing. We made everyone else quit. Made their asses quit. That means we're in charge now, right? Ryan, I'm right. We're in charge. We can do whatever we want.
I'm kind of torn because, like, on the one hand, sure, I like the idea that we have vanquished all comers. On the other hand, I feel like we are now retconning the years of this podcast where we said, like, what does that mean? We said before we were the only ones, so who
did
we vanquish?
You say retconning, I say vacating titles.
Mm.
Wow. Does that make us the NCAA?
The National Collegiate Ass-Kicking Association.
Yeah. Damn. If they, honestly, if they just changed their name to that and did everything else, like kept doing most of the things they're doing, I'd like them a little more.
With Mark Emmert.
A lot more.
Shark Emmert.
That's Mark Emmert.
Mark.
Again, if all of these things were decided by ladder matches.
Yeah.
Ladder match!
Why is Mark Emmert wearing the Sam Fisher night goggles?
Why not?
Why not? That's right.
On the list of, by the way, on the list of video game characters who are extremely unrealistic, he is the most. I know you say, oh, why is a man doing fairly normal man-like things, albeit extraordinary, but not for a video game? Why is he the most unrealistic video game character when the most famous video game character is, in fact, an Italian man who can jump into toilets and enter a magical world of fantasy without dying, and who fights a giant gorilla who throws barrels at him from on high? Well, the reason is, Sam Fisher in Splinter Cell is supposed to be what? Like 50?
Like 52, yeah. He's real, like, I got a kid in college age.
I gotta take another job. knew I shouldn't have got that timeshare.
Yeah,
oh.
He wants to go to grad school, so I gotta stay in the CIA.
I think he works, though, because, like, how would a man of 52 years old approach, like, we got to infiltrate this base?
Oh, can I do it sitting down?
I'm going to get there an hour early. I'm going to lie down for a while. I'm going to wait till it's real quiet. I'm going to wait till everybody clocks the fuck out so I don't have to deal with anyone.
He doesn't make enough noise. That's the problem. Sam Fisher, when he goes over things, it's effortless and silent as opposed to...
Okay, we can upload an expansion pack full of grunts.
Sure.
Yeah. At no point does he stop and go, oh, I dropped a contact.
Also, he should constantly be wearing like a knee brace or something.
Yeah, like a Brett Favre copper back brace. It's a copper
fit. I think you can
fit.
Make it perfectly old man accurate if instead of like, Sam, we're launching the mission at 9 o'clock at night. It's like 4 a.m., Sam. Go time is 4 a.m. Got to get up real early.
Good. I've been up for an hour already.
Good. I got a fishing trip at 8 a.m., so can we get this done?
I made eggs for everyone.
Yeah, I think that we were faking it till we make it when we said we were the internet's only college football podcast, but we made it.
But now it's true. Now it's true, and I dare anyone to prove otherwise. Anyone!
No one can stop us, is my point. So please.
That's true. They would have by now, wouldn't they?
Yeah, just give us what we want, and no one will get hurt. For instance,
it's kind of like when Spencer said we can do whatever we want now, as in, what were we doing before? Does that imply people were making us do the things we were doing before?
This was a highly regulated podcast for the last X years, but now...
Finally, creative freedom.
Just read what's on the card. This says talk for 25 minutes about obscure Neo Geo games. Just do it.
Everything was scripted by Jim Bankoff up until 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Here, do a weird, sexy Bobby Petrino voice. People love that.
The rumor I actually would prefer to spread is that Bill ghost wrote the show.
Yep, it's all his fault.
Bill Connolly ghost wrote the Shutdown Full
Cast.
Idiot
Bill Connolly.
That's right. Yes.
Secret idiot is a great category of person. Mm. Like Wolf Blitzer. I'm convinced after seeing him on Jeopardy, Wolf Blitzer's a secret idiot. Maybe not so secret anymore.
Tom Crean, secret idiot?
Oh, we had a Tom Crean story come up.
I don't know that we're allowed to tell it.
Okay. Never mind.
Yeah, another Tom Crean secrets, y'all.
Tom Crean secrets.
I'm gonna say the one sentence that I will be allowed to say that will probably keep this anonymous enough for our purposes, and it is that a playing of this podcast of an episode containing a Tom Crean joke accidentally happened within hearing distance of IRL Tom Crean. Sorry.
Splinter Cell, Tom Crean Secrets Edition.
We've infiltrated Tom Crean's ears.
We've got to get to his pants.
That seems easy.
There's sneaking room in the pants.
How do you aim anywhere near him and miss his pants, I guess is my question.
That's true. He's like a boxer.
Yeah.
I've got haters, and they can't hit me if I pull them all the way up here. No body blows for old Tom Crean.
Good old King Hippo of college basketball.
He's got the khakis with the band that says Crean on the front.
Someone please Photoshop that.
Someone please rewrite Apple Bottom Jeans about Tom Crean's clothes.
Apple Bottom Creans.
I'm saying.
Apple Ladder Creans.
Ample Bottom Crean.
Apple Picking Creans.
It's not weird. He just wears his pants in an extremely retro fashion, right?
And he wants to fuck your girl in an orchard.
Wait, thank you. This was going so well.
No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't, because Bill Connolly isn't here to run this podcast as he did for years.
The quality is nosediving.
That explains why we never started on time.
We're lost without you, Bill. Come back. Save us.
I'm fine.
Stop putting up such an S&P fuss, Ryan. We'll get through it.
All right. So this is the first of our preview episodes about checking the card. College football.
But we can do it.
Which we have to do for the most part without Bill's previews, which means, y'all buckle up. This is going to be inconsistent.
Yes, which they're totally not accustomed to. Jason, you have the con. You have decided on a way to do this so we rearrange college football to our liking. And
blame Jason for everything that happens next, I guess is what we're saying.
That seems unfair.
Well, yep, yeah, but if you have complaints about it, please direct them to Brian Floyd.
Yes.
Yeah, you can complain. Just complain to Floyd. That's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Replacing Bill in all his duties, including master statistician, will be me. I'm incredibly good at statistics. Just chosen not to reveal that to anyone, including any of my algebra teachers who failed me. This is a deep, deep ruse.
They did fail you. I agree.
Yeah, in a way, I guess. We failed each other, we could say. The relationship just didn't work out. Me and algebra, we just...
A series of broken marriages.
It just wasn't meant to be, yeah. So, we could preview on a conference by conference basis. We have done that before. It's very normcore, kind of far too normal for us.
For one thing, it contains football.
Well, let's hypothesize, if there were multiple college football podcasts in the world, that's the way most of them would do it. And we don't really want to do things that most people would do, if you haven't caught on by now. Last year, we made up fake Homer podcasts to preview each conference with, and that was...
That went great.
Universally beloved.
Let's say the reception was hit or miss. The list of people who liked all of them is short. I don't even think it includes all of us.
And does not include people on this program.
to be clear, I hold those people close to my heart, and you are the only ones I will save in the end times.
It was fun, but we wanted to try something new. Even dumber.
Spencer's walking away from the mic. What are you doing?
Yeah, it got too intense. Got too real.
Oh, bye.
So Spencer's left. He's going to find Bill, I think.
He's really trying to get me to stop talking, and I don't know why he's doing that.
Trying to get me to stop talking?
No, he's waving at me to not indicate that he's leaving. Okay, I won't.
No, we know you clocked out, buddy. You owe us these 3 minutes.
The fiction is maintained.
All right. So, again, everything smooth, totally normal, totally on course.
Oh, I think he's going to close the windows so we can't hear the lawnmower from next door.
We just need a here. We're also hiring for a part time position. Spencer Hall podcast body double.
Not voice double.
Yeah, we need your body to acoustically sound like Spencer's. So if you are I could
accomplish this with a large sack of wet grain,
a stack of hairy pillows with a tank top over them. That would work. Sorry,
so
Jason.
If you're interested. Reach out to Brian Floyd.
Reach out to Brian Floyd on Twitter.
So we decided to do something even dumber this year, to split up teams according to their truest measure of cultural sensibility. We're throwing geography out the window, throwing out team quality, all that shit. We're going by jersey color. We're dividing teams up into, we did a handful of groups, mostly the Power Five. We included a few who got the call up. And yeah, just redesigned the country according to our liking. One problem here is that there are a lot of red teams. This is a hurdle. So had to mess with it a little bit, but the conference we're going to preview today is all red, top to bottom.
Can I make a terrible joke here?
These colors run.
How could anyone stop you?
It's all about the hue.
I am also walking away from the desk at this time.
Soon it will just be me and Jason, and then we'll fight, and he'll win, and then this is his podcast.
So, Ryan, we split the conference up into two divisions, and it just so happens that Ryan and I are sharing the same division. So since everyone else has left, we get to focus on our precious, precious, normal red division.
Regular red is how Jason has phrased it.
That's true. I did go for the
We want to call this Red Dead Division.
The Red Dead Division.
In this division, we have, just so everybody knows ahead of time, Georgia, Stanford, Utah, NC State, Wisconsin, and Nebraska.
All very red.
Yeah, decidedly red teams. There's no way here that feels wrong. Just as a spoiler, there will be teams who, once we get to the end of this, both divisions, you'll say, why wasn't I there? Too bad. Just deal with it. Maybe you'll be in a later episode. Maybe you won't.
Like in making real divisions.
There are teams in and near the Power Five who wear red, who will not be in the red conference. Perhaps they'll emerge in another color conference.
Perhaps they should try harder to be interesting.
So, or just change colors. That would work too.
Yeah, wear orange, by the way. Yeah. If you want to make the cut, wear orange.
There also weren't enough green teams to make a green division, right?
Right.
That's unfortunate. I look good in green, not great in red. I don't look good in anything. Never mind. So I think the goal here is to go through our divisions and basically, did we decide we're each going to pick who we think our division champ would be and therefore figure out who our conference champ would be?
So we're having a content meeting right now during the episode, which that's fine. It's kind of, I figured this
hey,
is how we
back.
Would figure this out. Okay,
it's like,
good.
It's like Disney Underground.
Spencer, we're having a meeting.
Oh, he doesn't have his headphones yet. He just wandered back into the room.
That's fine.
Is he sticky?
Hang on. No?
Oh, interesting.
He's very confused that I'm touching him.
This is all so unpleasant.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, buddy. We're having a meeting. So,
that's great.
I think what we could do with these conference previews is, as we've split up the conferences into two divisions, two people become experts on each of those divisions. I think those two people can sort of present the predicted outcome, predicted rankings for these divisions over the course of the season. Since this is a very serious college football preview, if you have a preview, you need rankings. And I think at the end, we should all pick our favorite to win the whole conference. Does this make sense?
I'm fine with that.
Yes.
The only outstanding question, which we can either figure out during this meeting or during a meeting during an episode still to come, would be how we actually decide who wins, since they don't play each other. But that's the least of our concerns now.
I mean, some of them play each other.
Here's the thing Bill always told us in all his many years of leading the Fullcast. Bill Connolly. He always said, and he said this at the start of every show, he said, remember, the numbers don't matter.
That's correct. Yeah.
So as long as we have that as our guiding principle, and as long as we just use things like the eye test or who we think plays a better brand of football.
Or hardtitude.
Or, yeah, grit.
Wantedness.
Yeah. I think if we say which of these teams wants it the most, I think that will be truest to Bill's vision.
And okay. I think that we also are setting up some pretty strict guardrails for ourselves as we take away the most reliable indicator of success. I'm referring, of course, to jersey color.
Second only to total offense.
Mm.
I think pure wins, raw wins.
Sure, sure.
Regard in conference, out of conference, just ranked teams by wins.
Yeah.
Did they play three FCS teams? That's still a win.
Oh, God. The chip that Bill implanted in my head at birth is actually starting to vibrate at this point, and it is so unpleasant.
Jason, where do you want to start in Red Dead Division?
Did you have an order in mind for how we discuss the quality of these rosters?
I mean, why don't we just do it from the bottom, from what you've ranked all these teams based on something based on last year. I forget.
Based on something last year.
I don't remember. Okay.
That's fine. Terrific. So Ryan's in charge of all of us, and that's never not going to be funny.
The spreadsheet for breaking down each division, it shows the ranking from last year in the Massey composite, which throws together every computer ranking. Someone took all our computers, so we have to use someone else's.
So why don't we start at the bottom of that, and then we can decide if, like, we can sort of narrow our focus as we get higher to figure out if this is our division winner or not.
Yeah, that works.
Okay, so at the bottom of this division, Nebraska. Happy Scott Frost Day, everybody.
Nebraska, ranking 77th in the computers last year, and predicted to rank very far from that this year.
Jason, do you have Nebraska's 2019 schedule open?
I could if you don't have a computer.
I do.
Okay, I don't.
Okay. So here are here are the first four games of the year. South Alabama at Colorado, Northern Illinois at Illinois. Jason, Scott Frost Day commemorates the first day of Nebraska football season, so long as Nebraska doesn't win. Then Scott Frost Day continues. That was the rule last year.
Is this like standing up until your team makes a basket in a basketball game?
Yes, okay. Yes. And so last year, I think
so Nebraska stood for like 7 weeks?
I think they're hardy.
I don't think it was quite that bad, but I think it was like 5 weeks. It was a while. Jason, how long is Scott Frost Day going to be this year?
I mean, they'll win that week one game.
You sure about that? Here's the thing you have to bank on. Does that week one game take place? Because this was the issue last year, is that they were supposed to play, I want to say, Akron, but that game got canceled due to weather, and as a result, they didn't get a win in week one, and a rainout counts the same as a loss for purposes of Scott Frost Day.
Well, the thing you have to keep in mind is that weather is growing more stable over time from
year
to year.
Sure, sure.
So, you know, if that was the situation last year, I'm sure it's been corrected by now as our planet becomes more more welcoming to us.
Okay, so you're saying Scott Frost Day only lasts but one day this year?
Yes, I think we have fixed the environment enough for Scott Frost Day to be nipped in the bud.
Unlike Nebraska, I'm going to take a flyer.
Scott Frost Day extends all the way to week three, Northern Illinois. I think South Alabama will be inevitably
canceled.
You
think Nebraska can beat Northern Illinois? I'm asking if that's what you're saying.
That would be new.
Okay.
Shit. Okay. Nebraska at Illinois. Just I'll go all
sure.
the way to week four. I'll go all the way to week four.
I wasn't arguing. I was just clarifying.
No. You're right. I'm going to push it to week four. I think their first win of the season will come September 21st on the road at Illinois. Yes, I'm prepared to be wrong. That's why I do this podcast.
Well, I mean, I do think it's important, you know, the Nebraska-NIU rivalry. You can't get all that back in once, you know, as long as you make progress toward, you know, eventually beating them someday.
Is NIU in our red conference at all?
Unfortunately, they did not make the cut for this conference, even though they are better than some of the football teams in it.
So let's agree, if Nebraska loses to Northern Illinois, Nebraska's out of the conference and Northern Illinois is in.
Yeah, that's good. A relegation game midseason. I like it.
Nebraska last year, 1-5 in one possession games. And one would think, like, maybe that luck will swing. Maybe God hates you. That's the other part of it. Hard to say.
Is it hard to say?
Yeah, just because the will of the Lord is unknowable to most of us.
So I think you're contrasting regression to the mean with God is mean.
Yes, that's right. That's another thing Bill taught us.
Bill did teach us that God is real and he hates us. Those are...
So yeah, I think Nebraska, yeah, they will probably be better this year. They went 4-8 last year. It seems very hard to imagine that they can't improve on that a bit.
It doesn't. But, if they can have that many ones, like seriously, with the roster they had, as bad as they were,
yeah.
Now you say that you cite that like one score game stat,
yeah,
right. That in itself is a compliment to, I think they were really well managed, like as well a managed 4-8 team as there was in the land.
Yeah. Yeah. Without question.
Is it like an extremely Big Ten version of calling them well coached as a backhanded compliment?
Absolutely.
It's kind of all over the place though, because like some of those ones, like they lost to Ohio State by 5 points. They also lost to Troy by 5 points.
Troy is good.
Nothing wrong with losing to Troy at home.
And to Northwestern by 3 points. And to a not that good Colorado team by 5 points. So, like,
you repeat yourself.
They also had one of the most unpleasant scores of the year, 9-6 win over Michigan.
Suck it. Yeah. The board says Michigan.
Oh, sorry, over Michigan State. That's my fault.
The board. Oh, yeah. Like, I'm going to feel any pity after watching years of just cold slag Michigan State football, including last year, I'm still upset about what unbearable trash that entire season was.
Yeah, garbage. So, I mean, Nebraska got into a bunch of bullshit games. Like, look at the end of the Colorado game, the Ohio State game, and still kept his head above water enough to beat Michigan State at a Michigan State game.
If their year is, like, just 50% less bullshit than last year, they make a bowl game, right?
Yeah, right. Yes, exactly.
Here's the thing. If they don't do that, if they don't make a bowl game, it will be the first time they have gone 3 years without a bowl berth since they hired Bob Devaney in 1962.
Well, hey, and then look what happened.
That's true. Yep. And the important thing to remember, Nebraska fans, college football as a sport and as a national entity, exactly the same as it was in 1962. There's no reason why Nebraska can't be a national champion contender year in and year out, except this year they're not going to win the Red Dead Division.
They will not win the Red Dead Division, but they will go bowling.
Wisconsin!
Wisconsin!
They have two Bobbies and a Bob on staff. I feel like that's an important metric.
Babby.
They also does anybody know where Wisconsin opens the year? On the road at USF.
USF.
USF. Yeah.
Did they leave something in Tampa?
It's a pre-Outback Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
So I was drinking with my friend Paul. He's a coach down there. And Paul, like, he says, I left my keys. It's like, where'd you leave them? He goes, at Tampa. And I said, why don't you
Raymond James Stadium.
Just schedule a football game down there. We'll go. The kids will love it. It'll be great. It's Big Ten guy. Big Ten guy's always having a beer with somebody. Great guy.
Here's the best thing I can say about Wisconsin this year. So sometimes you have to start over at quarterback, and it's a stressful thing because you've had the same person holding that role for like two or three seasons. You feel like they've provided stability. Even if they weren't as good as you wanted them to be, it's sort of like, man, that's a transition. I am not worried about, like, what is Wisconsin without Alex Hornibrook? What will this mean? Like, that's fine. Yeah. That's a good thing.
How many touchdowns did he throw as the starter last year?
Last
four.
Seems bad.
Oh, it's real bad. Like, you go, remember that was, you know, 2 years ago. Ah, what potential? Yeah, man.
He actually threw 13, but that's not that many more than four.
Four was close.
13. Only played in 9 games last year. Got hurt, I think, midway through the season. 13 touchdowns, 11 interceptions. Yeah, it's fine. I'm just saying change can be good.
Yeah, and I mean, I think when the change is from, what, like 4 or 5 years of just extremely regular Wisconsin quarterbacks, now you're bringing in your highest rated recruit at any position in more than a decade is your new quarterback, Graham Mertz. You got arguably the best pro style freshman in the country. And, you know, will that go awesome? Maybe not at first, but I think it's in better shape than it's been in, you know, quite a few years.
God, there's a country Grammerts joke somewhere. I'll find it. I'll dig around and root for it. We'll get there. Because when you think Wisconsin,
root, Ryan, root.
When you think Wisconsin, you think St. Lunatics and Nelly.
Because this is Wisconsin, what I suggest you do is put it with a little yeast and let it ferment for a while. It'll make a tasty brew once you get to it.
Thank you.
I definitely think about rooting.
Wisconsin, you play Ohio State, Michigan, and Michigan State cross division.
Good luck.
I don't think this is going to be a fun year for Wisconsin. Like, they might be a better football team in some regards. I think they have a bunch of turnover on the offensive line as well. But yeah, it does not feel like this is when they return to curious team that is winning 11 games, but not actually in the playoff conversation for practical right. purposes.
Nor, like will they be your like 9-4 Rose Bowl winner.
Right, right. Like, should probably still make a bowl game. Should probably, like, of those three games, Ohio State, Michigan, Michigan State, it doesn't feel crazy to be like, oh, they'll win at least one of them. But it doesn't, I don't know, not a Red Dead Division winner to me.
Yeah, I think you're looking at about maybe 8-4 or so and not winning the Red Dead Division.
NC State, Jason, tell me your NC State feelings.
They've lost Ryan Finley, who was the very rare NC State player who you can look at and say, ah, he's actually making a difference here. They've been pretty good for 2 or 3 years, and that's about all you can say for the entirety of their history. They've often been pretty good. That's it.
They also lost something more important to me, at least, and that's offensive coordinator Eli Drinkwitz. Just because, oh man, if you can have a guy named Eli Drinkwitz associated with your team, frankly, like Wisconsin, I don't know how you didn't hire the guy whose last name is Drinkwitz, but...
I mean, that's like a mama's calling situation.
That is a mama's calling.
Because he went to Boone, North Carolina.
I was going to say, the Shiners called him. And they were like, hey, come on home, son.
Hey, Eli, come on over.
Yeah, come on. a guy in Boone named Eli, who's brewing it up, just cooking.
Eli Drinkwitz us.
So NC State, the last couple of years under Dave Doran, does a weird and extremely frustrating thing. They get ranked, which granted is not a thing that they frequently did before Dave Doran, but they get ranked and then they lose almost immediately. Last year, as a ranked team, they went 1-3. The year before that, 2-3. Like, I think the answer for NC State, their path to success, is stay right at the top of also receiving votes. And then at the end of the year, at your very last game, win that one. And then you don't have to play a game after that as a ranked team. You can just bask in being like, yep, finish the year 18. Suck on that.
Yeah, which team is every conference, old traditional conference before our new realignment plan, which team is every conference's like the strength of schedule buffeter? Like NC State is often like, you know, oh, you look up and, oh, Clemson's only played two ranked teams. And you're like, NC State is 25th. Oh, excuse me, three, you know.
Right, right.
Like you have like Northwestern is always that in the old Big Ten. And
Kansas State sometimes serves this purpose in the Big 12, it feels like.
Yeah, yeah.
Quality wins, mm-hmm. right? You point mm-hmm. to Kansas State as a quality win.
The other team that we're going to get to, Utah, frequently fills this role for the Pac-12.
Very much, yes.
The SEC team that does this,
it's got to be Mississippi State.
I feel like Mississippi State trades the role with South Carolina. Like they sort of pass off the baton as to who's going to play serve that purpose.
That's fair.
I have a bitter answer. Since 2009, it's been Florida.
Wow.
No, you're the team that appears in the top 12 for no clear reason and then leaves.
Oh, God, we're NC State.
And then no,
you're please, super NC State.
Yeah,
super.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's the worst thing anyone's ever said about
you're
us.
NC great.
I will say, yeah. I will say this, Dave Doran, 9-4, 2 years in a row, given the disastrous history of NC State football, that's as good as anyone's been for a while. I almost feel like NC State's at a mathematical limit where they just have four. They just have four losses, man. Just pick where you want them.
It is not all their fault because the rest of the division is like not amazing, but is pretty. The middle of that division is a bunch of teams that can beat pretty much each other and occasionally give Clemson a scare.
Like you're referring to their old division.
Yeah, their old division. Sorry about that. Obviously, North Carolina is in a bit of a weird rebuild, and Georgia Tech is kind of an open question to see what they do with the transition there. But, like, other than that, it's like all the teams that you're like, well, if Virginia wins three games in a row, and then they do. And then you're like, all Virginia has to do is not lose two games, and then they do. So
I like that you just put NC State in both old ACC divisions.
That's helpful of me, right?
Yeah. I only have one other note on NC State, and it's an important cultural one. That August 31st game to open the season, East Carolina, NC State, Cookout Bowl. That's
cookout cup.
Yeah, that's the Cookout Cup. Winner gets a tray. Choose wisely.
You can fit like $4 worth of food inside the Cookout Cup.
Here's the thing: you're gonna want to really fill up at that game because you have a road game in Morgantown this year, and you're gonna want to have a base layer of food.
You better hydrate. You know how you hydrate? You ask for the large cup of Cookout because it costs the same as the regular.
I need 3 scoops of vanilla ice cream covered with cheer wine, please. Don't ask.
I would really like NC State to be. I would really like NC State to be our Red Dead Division winner. I don't see it.
Yet another pretty good bowl game attendee, but no, not a Red Dead Division contender.
This brings me to the most intriguing contender for me in this division, and that is Utah. Utah has only one major flaw, in my opinion. They always lose one stupid fucking game. In 2014, they lost to a 3-win Wazoo. In 2015, they lost to a 7-win Arizona. In 2016, they lost to a 5-win Cal and a 4-win Oregon. In 2017, they lost to 6-win Arizona State and 7-win Oregon. And last year wasn't too bad. They lost to a 7-win Arizona State team, but still an Arizona State team that, like, if Utah is cresting and representing the entire division, its old division, that is, like, they should be able to beat a barely bowl-eligible Arizona State team. So, like,
I heard that they were crusting, even though I knew that's not what you were saying.
Well, now I feel uncomfortable.
They put it in the oven until it crusted.
That's like tater tot casserole. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Funeral potatoes.
Which sums up Kyle Whittingham's style of football.
You're getting funeral potatoes, and you're gonna like it.
You're getting funeral punts.
And that's the problem is that once a season, some other team says, "No thanks, I don't want funeral potatoes," and they just don't eat them.
I always feel like Utah is the guy who's like in the fight when somebody goes, "Let's settle this like men," throws the pistol to the side.
Yeah.
Utah talks like anywhere from 7 to 9 teams a year into doing that.
Yeah.
And then
one team shoots him in the leg.
Then there's at least 3 teams that are like, nah.
That's a really good way to put it. Yeah, you find that one Utah game per year when it's like, Utah has deleted offense. Just not doing it.
Get down here and fight me.
Nope. Hey, honey, did you pack the passing yards? Oh, damn it, Deborah. I told you to pack the passing yards.
Debate Utah, you coward. They declined to have a debate.
Yeah, teams like USC and occasionally Oregon and Stanford, when they play Utah, they just say, no, it's way easier to sit up here in this plane and press a button and blow you up. We're not going to land and fist fight you because that's why we invented this beautiful killing machine.
Also, Utah opens the season at BYU, which...
Hell yes.
Yeah, it's just going to be...
a big old mess.
Just going to be fighty as shit. The good news, I guess, is that their road schedule is not too bad. They go on the road to USC, Oregon State, Washington, and Arizona. The bad news is that they're going to, like, fuck around and lose to, I don't know, 5-win UCLA or some shit like that. So, Utah, I want to believe that you can come out of nowhere and be, like, an interesting, scrappy 11-win team, but you don't want me to. What's that about?
Because belief is for BYU. Utah is a...
secular?
Science and reason, and yeah. I don't know if that's true at all. I mean, it has to be to some degree, right? But
legally, yes.
Okay, yeah, you're right. Accurate. Yeah. So here are 4 things I like about Utah this season. Tyler Huntley's back at quarterback. He's a good quarterback. He can run around a little bit. I think he's a good fit for what they want to do with the game of football, which is, you know, hang on to the ball and not let you score and all that kind of stuff. This isn't really a backhanded compliment. I think he's a pretty good quarterback. Zach Moss is a great running back. They have as the new Bill C, here's an advanced statistic for you. Are you ready? They have at least 22 linemen with Pacific Islander names, which is that's how many you want Utah to have, right?
That's like, technically they could just field the whole team.
They could. I mean, a team of nothing but
Pacific Islander linemen.
Yeah, from Utah specifically.
Yeah.
And finally, so with Utah, every year I check in on one thing. I only need to research one thing to know how Utah is going to be this year. It's the punter. They have a Ray Guy dynasty going at this point. And I took one look at the new guy, and I am sold. New guy Ben Lennon has full sleeve tats, black and white. That's your punter.
And continuing the other important tradition for Utah, which is, I believe this is their, third Australian punter in a row?
At least.
Right. Sure. Yeah. I believe. Now, Mitch Wishnowsky, who just went to the NFL and is with the 49ers, kind of a subdued dude, right? Not necessarily, you know, your outspoken guy, right? That's over. Because Ben Lennon is, full sleeve tats. He's Aussie as hell. Yeah, we're good. So this means, I think, with a solid Australian punter, that's a minimum of 5 wins. Bare minimum.
Utah's going to go like 9-3. Yeah. Did you just listen to the statistics I threw at you?
Yeah, embarrassing. Embarrassing, Spencer.
No. I mean, I'm saying, like, at worst.
You're saying the punter alone is 5 wins.
Oh, okay.
Punter alone is 5.
Oh, okay, I got you.
So I'm bullish. I'm bullish on the rest of that team somehow scraping together 4 wins worth of talent and execution. Because Ben Lennon's going to hold it down.
This is our new proprietary stat. Punter wins above replacement. Pwar!
By the way, I haven't looked at a single stat or highlight of his. Just one photo.
That's
fine. We're good.
So Utah, are we comfortable making them our dark horse for the division?
Absolutely. I'll go further than that. I mean, I'll put them at least number 2 in the division.
Yeah, and that means Stanford, you are not number 2.
Stanford, you have just taken a step back.
I do want to say, Paulson Adebo, great. Fucking baller. Awesome cornerback. Had a ton of passes defended last year. Is just, like, kind of preternatural at knowing when to jump for a ball and get position, and is just a coverage nightmare. Stanford's problem is that you built a big, burly running tank, and that it couldn't run the ball last year. Whoops. Uh-oh. Uh-oh. What's that? We need this tank to be a boat now. That's a problem. Actually, we needed the tank to be a hot air balloon, which...
It's kind of like Brett Bielema's Arkansas teams. Like, the entire brand was like, grrr, but you can't grrr.
Right.
Like, you have a pretty good quarterback, KJ Costello. It's pretty efficient, but, like... That's not really the brand, is it?
We need to teach this elephant how to hang glide. Oh, dead elephant. Shit.
Get a bigger glider.
If Rick Ross can do it, Stanford can do it. And Rick Ross said he could do it. He's never lied.
In Stanford's first 6 games, they have to play. They start with Northwestern at USC, at UCF, and Oregon at home. And then they play Washington for their 6th game. So, the good news... is you're probably going to have a pretty good sense of Stanford. You're not going to have to wait. You're going to have a pretty good idea of, like, oh, things are back on track and this is a team that's going to compete for a conference title, or nope. Whatever the Foster Farms Bowl is at this point, whatever they've named it this year, that's where
the Red Box Bowl. So, mm-hmm. I mean, luckily Stanford starts hot, right? That's what they're known for, just right out of the gates.
Yeah.
Stanford week one is just awesome.
Especially when it comes to Northwestern.
Yeah, especially when they go to fucking UCF to open their stadium. That sounds right within their comfort zone.
Yeah,
flying across planet Earth to play a good team.
Can I make the analogy? Stanford, in terms of when they get going, they're a lot like Godzilla in the new movie. You got to blow a nuke up in their face to wake them up first.
Yeah.
Yeah, UCF will do that.
The line on that game was like 2 points back in January. I don't know what it is now, but... That felt like a solid investment.
Big lizard sleepy.
KJ Costello is fine. He had some really good wideouts to throw to last year. They are not back this year. I don't know. I don't feel great. I know it betrays my legacy formerly as the world's largest Stanford fan. But I don't feel great about Stanford this year. I think, like, bowl eligible, yes. Probably... win a game in the North that shakes things up a bit, but I don't think they're winning their former division or our division.
Yeah, I think they'll just be sort of late stage David Shaw, perhaps, like, you know, for the past few years. It's just like, you don't really want to play them. but not as badly as you didn't want to play him.
Right. And five it's years ago. And now it's like you don't want to play him, not cuz you're worried you can't win, cuz you can, you might not. It's more just like, oh, this is unpleasant.
Yeah. It's going to take forever.
This is like eating a whole head of cabbage.
It'll actually be a shorter game than usual, but dear sweet Jesus, feels like it's the 3 hour and 15 minute game that feels like five.
Yeah. Yeah. And that brings us to Jason. I assume this is going to be our division winner, Georgia.
Yeah. I mean, I will honestly give Utah like 10%
of the vote.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it's gotta be Georgia. This team is fucking Alabama talented at this point. Your return of veteran quarterback is really good.
So let's make the case for why it wouldn't be Georgia. Not that it won't be, but if it's not, why?
I mean, well, typically when Georgia is the no doubt favorite, historically that has not gone well for Georgia. So right there, we're off to a bad, off to a bad foot for Georgia.
Yeah. They can.
That's about it.
Elijah Holyfield is gone, but they still have D'Andre Swift. They are historically great at spreading the ball around. They've had like five straight years where they had two backs with 700 or more rushing yards.
That offensive line.
The offensive line is
disgusting.
The offensive line is really good. They only have two road games where they don't have a week off beforehand. So I guess the only thing you can look at is that they've turned over both coordinators. They lost one coordinator to Tennessee on the offensive side of the ball, and the other is now the head coach at Colorado, if memory serves. Mel Tucker, that's right. I guess I will say, like, if Coley stumbles as a play caller on the offensive side of the ball, that's the only thing that maybe worries me. Because do you know when Georgia lost last year? When they had to throw the ball and couldn't just run the shit out of the ball. Last year, they finished in their Power 5 games, not including the bowl loss to Texas, with 257 pass attempts and 422 rushing attempts. And the only games where they passed the ball more than they ran it were the LSU loss and the loss to Bama in the SEC championship. The rest of the time, they were very happy to usually like double up rushes to passes. And some of that is that they were beating teams easily and just running the ball out. But some of it is that like that's just the style they wanted to play. They were not really looking to get into an air battle with you. They wanted it to be a rock fight.
Yeah, I think my favorite Georgia stat from last year was they put 63 points on UMass with Jake Fromm throwing five times. That sort of sums up the ideal of Georgia football, no matter the decade.
Yeah, yeah.
After years of run the ball, Bobo, oh, lo, did we harvest.
So, Jason, if we have to pick our top three for Red Dead Division, who do you want to go with? Georgia 1.
Georgia 1, Utah 2. I have Wisconsin 3rd.
Wow.
Over Stanford, I don't feel very strongly about that.
I agree with Stanford not third, but I think I'm willing to go with NC State.
Wow,
as okay. My third team there.
We're far apart on NC State. I have them last.
You have them all the way at the bottom.
I have Nebraska making a move. I think Nebraska there's just a lot of signposts that suggest Nebraska is going to get a good bit better. I mean, I still have them fifth.
Yeah.
Behind Stanford, but
yeah.
Yeah, I just don't see how NC State takes a leap, and I think Nebraska's a team that can.
Okay. It's time for the other division whose name I forget.
This is the Dark Red Division.
Dark Red, Blood Red.
And anyone who feels these colors aren't dark enough, they list themselves as like maroon and crimson. So
yeah.
Yet maroon and crimson, in our view, are just red teams that don't want it enough. Like deoxygenated blood.
Is that?
Ew. Oh, yeah, it's like damn. It's like scabs.
Yeah.
It's a scab red division.
I mean, look at the history of unionized labor in a lot of these states.
Mm. A pithy point. Mm. Shall we start at the bottom?
Where's that, Spencer?
Oh, I think that's Minnesota in this case, in this division.
Well, I was hoping to actually go last with Minnesota because I think this Minnesota team is going to be really fun to watch. And I was hoping to end on a high note, but sure, we can do this.
Oh, you know, you can do the Minnesota thing. That's fine. No, it's okay.
No, I'm not hurt. Don't nice me. All right. I'm going to do kind of bullshit thing where I focus entirely on the schedule here, because this is going to be fun. I'm going to be watching Minnesota football regularly this year for reasons that have nothing to do with PJ Fleck being a crazy person and more to do with Minnesota has the best September schedule in terms of just like gleeful giggling from impartial third parties. I don't know who made this schedule, but I don't think they read us. I don't think they read Bill. There are some things in here that even a few years back when these schedules were made, you wouldn't want to put these teams in here, but hey, Minnesota, you did it. You put them all in here. The Gophers open against South Dakota State, who made the FCS semifinals last year.
Jackrabbits!
And finished 10-3. Then they host Georgia Southern. Stop doing that, teams. Except don't. It's great. But
don't do it.
But it's been a minute since we all should have realized as a nation that it's not good to schedule Georgia Southern. Would anyone like to guess why Minnesota is inviting a triple option team?
Did they schedule this team during the like 6 months recently when it wasn't a triple option team?
I'm guessing that's what happened because I don't see a reason on the rest of their schedule to do this. Unless PJ Flex offseason conditioning is like a vision quest to go find Paul Johnson.
Is it possible PJ Fleck was overexcited, did not read the contract closely, was like, hell yeah, we'll play Georgia?
I think it's a lot more possible they thought they were scheduling Georgia State.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
Anyway, stop scheduling teams, Georgia Southern. Stop scheduling Georgia Southern. Only don't ever stop scheduling Georgia Southern because then we get to watch. After that, Minnesota goes to Fresno, which is the opposite of Minneapolis in every way I can imagine. Also, Fresno won their conference last year or won their division last
year. That's two years ago.
That sounds like a terrifying movie from the 1930s. Minnesota goes to Fresno.
Yeah. I'm kind of interested to see how that goes, she said, waving her tiny Jeff Tedford stand flag alone in the wilderness. And then they open conference play at Purdue.
Hey, that ain't a problem for Minnesota, y'all.
If you don't care about whether Minnesota wins these games, this is a really fun September and one random day in August when you're hosting South Dakota.
Oh, no, there's money on this game, too. There's like passion. There's blood on this game because last year, Minnesota.
What happened last year?
Oh, Minnesota just turned around and like with a bloody lip and an ankle monitor on after getting hammered the week before. Guess what? They beat the crap out of Purdue 41-10. Yeah.
Weird.
I like that Minnesota's opening with four straight. Better not lose that games.
Yeah, seriously. Like they're we've said this before in previous years, but what's the one adjective you never want appended to your preseason out of conference opponents? Pesky.
Yeah.
You got a whole month of pesky.
Teams are the ones that are best equipped to make you look like assholes even when you win the game.
Yeah.
And Minnesota has a month of these.
Yeah, I don't have them last because I don't like them, by the way. Like they're gonna be super fun to watch.
No, if you don't care about what Minnesota's record at the end of this month is, this is your September team.
No, having Minnesota back is like the undersized but extremely drunk guy in the bar. That's exactly where they should be. As opposed to Wisconsin, the extremely oversized drunk guy in the
undersized
bar.
Undersized but extremely drunk, the PJ Fleck story. Drunk on
Wisconsin,
creatine,
the drunk guy drunk in front creatine. Of the bar.
The drunk guy atop the bar.
Yeah. So,
how are we determining who was at the bottom of our division anyway?
I'm just assuming Minnesota's down there.
Magic.
You did alphabetically, didn't you?
And no.
You got it wrong.
No.
Okay.
I did not.
Okay.
Right. I actually think the order in which we have them is the order in which they finish.
Spencer has a sorting bucket hat.
I do. If you reach into it, you can pull a hook out of it.
It says I'm an escaped python house.
To Brazil, here I go.
Thanks.
All
right. If we're going backwards in whatever sorting bucket hat order you've got in that enormous skull of yours, who's next?
I have a team with an identity crisis next, who I still think is...
No, I'm doing Texas A&M.
No, they know who they are. All 15 of them.
We're rich and we dress wonderfully.
Our dog is beautiful and our house is very large.
This is my beautiful wife.
Dog church, white pants, hair plugs, big truck.
Go away, horse. David Byrne.
Anyway, Texas A&M in a minute. Who are you talking about?
I'm talking about Mississippi State. That's right. Joe Moorhead came in, offensive coordinator from Penn State and from Fordham Prior, an innovator in his field, aggressive, creative. And what happens when you take an offensive innovator with a legacy of being extremely wily and keeping people on their toes? Yeah, you give him Nick Fitzgerald at quarterback. Turn him into a 17-point wonder.
I was going to say Steve Spurrier beats Bama at South Carolina.
So. This is like the redux of that, except without the prior experience being Spurrier. He just skipped that and went straight to, I'll do what works because I have to. Nick Fitzgerald as a passer last year pretty much forced Mississippi State to be a defense first team to an extreme. And
it's called making your teammates better.
That's quiet leadership.
Yeah, come on. And with Harris Williams, they were able to do that out of the backfield. But this year, that really won't be the case. In addition to that, if you're a defense first team and you lose all four of your starters on the D-line, is that bad?
It's just different.
We'll just have to overcome that. It's fine. That was the quarterback situation, by the way, between freshman Jalen Hayden. It was really real accurate, real good, but not a lot of experience. And Katayan Thompson, who kind of is, if I had to describe him as a passer, I would say that Nick Fitzgerald rubbed off on him a lot. In other words, as I said at one point last year, it looked like he was throwing passes with a hoof.
It's an ag school. So.
Just one more example of our society's hideous bias against those with more than two throwing limbs.
BoJack quarterbackman. And just like BoJack.
Cephalopod State's coming for you.
You were sad watching it. The thing with their quarterback is this. Tommy Stevens is coming in to transfer from Penn State. He's a fifth-year transfer. Tommy Stevens. Where does that name...
What an aggressively Penn State.
What a fucking Witsec name.
Oh, what state is he from? Indiana.
How
Indianapolis.
James Franklin let Tommy Stevens go?
Well, pretty easily, evidently.
Okay.
Yeah. He did work with Moorhead when he was on staff at Penn State. So he knows the system. I don't know if that matters a whole lot when... Your greatest claim to fame is that you were the number 5 player in Indiana that year. This is not poor mouthing Tommy Stevens. I'm just saying things that are true about him and that the situation there was so bad that he could sail into Starkville and become the likely starter despite having no experience playing in the SEC.
Can I detour into something I found on the internet this week involving Indiana?
Please.
It's a recipe that came out in the New York Times cooking newsletter. It's a species of fried species. It's a style of fried chicken native to Indiana, and it just involves putting a shit ton of black pepper in the batter. That's it. I was like, oh, I wonder if this is, you know, Nashville fried chicken is a thing. Now, what are we making of Indiana fried chicken? You fry it in lard with a fuck ton of black pepper in the batter. That's it. That's the whole thing.
Referred to as Cynthia's mistake.
Spicy. Yeah, that's like when you're shaking it in the batter and the little cap falls off.
I did that on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Come home, Elmer. I'll make the chicken regular again. Just come home.
Anyway, carry on.
Mississippi State's road schedule, by the way. I really don't know what to make of their road schedule. They got to play everybody in the SEC West, and that's awful. Their out-of-conference schedule, I will put it this way. They have the pilot... truck stop like method for scheduling places because they have Kansas State and Southern Miss, right? Only other people who have Manhattan, Kansas, and Hattiesburg on their docket, long haul truckers, sort of on brand for Mississippi State. I respect it. Their road schedule, Knoxville and Fayetteville.
Eh.
Yeah. I mean,
it's fine.
I don't know. One of those might get kind of hairy. I mean, Arkansas is still going to be awful. But
Fayetteville will be hairy.
Literally. Spend a night in Fayetteville.
Fayetteville will get hairy, right? Like, yeah. They'll win that, but, you know, nobody will feel good about it. Nobody. And then the other two are just outright bad. College Station and Auburn. Ugh. It's not good, y'all. It's bad. But still, I think that, like, this is probably, like, yeah, you know, it feels like the quality win team for the SEC this year.
That road schedule is like the college visit trip of a kid who's like
thinking of joining the military, man. Yeah. I don't really have it together. Like, by the time that mom and dad get into Auburn with them, they're like,
I don't know, HVAC repair pays really well.
Why don't you just figure it out for a while?
I like by the time mom and dad get to Auburn, because in my brain it was like all three of them are in the same freshman class. Which, that sounds like Auburn, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, I feel like this is the SEC's quality win team that can have some moments of looking real bad. By the way, Joe Moorhead, I don't know. I might rather just start Jalen Hayden and see if we can actually sort of get that offense, like, developing. Because if you do that thing where you have a grad transfer come in for a year, you just got this guy getting no reps behind him. Yeah. You know, you don't have forever, even in Starkville. I know their expectations, by the way, completely screwed now because they've forgotten their Mississippi State. They've forgotten the past. That's all. That's all I have to say about Mississippi State.
Next team.
I'm getting the bleak is creeping in. I think if we're going in order, then the next team we have up is going to be Wazoo.
Oh, hey, that's me. I'm giving it a second just to see if Brian Floyd knocks on the door.
He has not so far.
All right. Okay. Wazoo is coming off their best season ever, which paradoxically makes it even more impossible to know what to expect this season. So what I mean by that is they're near a reasonable ceiling for the talent that they're able to recruit to that far-flung corner of the country and for their conference. So now what, right? This is kind of a situation we've never seen Leach in before, because he started off this job backed into one corner, and now he's kind of backed into the opposite diagonal corner. And it's a corner that we've never really seen him in, you know, in his head coaching career. What happens when he gets to the ceiling and starts poking at that? Like, what happens then, right? So that'll be fun. It's Washington State. You know what to expect. Offense returns loaded. Pew, pew. The one thing I would like to learn is how to pronounce their presumptive starting quarterback's name, because I got nothing.
Can you spell it, please?
Okay, his first name is Gage, which I assume is not pronounced like Gaga.
Gaye.
First of all, this is the quarterback who wrecked them year before last at Eastern Washington. They snagged that guy. I don't know whether or not this counts as an early season Eastern Washington victory over Washington State, but we all know that Wazoo tends to go on to good things when they get all the willies out of their system early by losing to a directional Washington.
That's a very fast and furious approach to quarterbacking.
His last name is Gubrud, and he looks exactly like you imagine that guy would.
So is it Gubrud?
Gage. I feel like we're missing some umlauts.
Gage Gubrud, or is it Gage Gubrud?
Can we just call him Gigi? Except that's what my niece calls her grandma.
No, I'm gonna make him glamorous and just go to the first name. Gage.
Gubrud. Gubrud. It sounds like a really dense bread.
I'm gonna pronounce his last name backwards, and now he's Gage Durbug.
This concludes my thoughts on Washington State. It's Washington State. You're gonna watch it. You have no fucking clue what they're gonna do. They're undersized in the secondary. It'll probably be fine.
It's sort of like stumbling upon a stray dog with a katana on its back. You're like, all right.
Which, again,
I'll stay back, but I'm going to watch to see what happens.
I think what I'm trying to say is this is a unique position for Washington State, making them even more interesting than usual, maybe. But also, it's Washington State. If they were less interesting, you'd be watching them anyway, because you never know.
Most dangerous game on the schedule for them. Two of them back-to-back early. That is September 7th, Northern Colorado at home. This is an FCS team for Wazoo early in the season. If they lose this game, it means they're going to do real well. If they win this game, trouble may be on the horizon. Now, that's just by rule. By schedule, trouble's on the horizon anyway, because the next week they go to Houston. So after a relatively sedate start by playing New Mexico State and Northern Colorado, you know, just heroin right to the eyeball, baby. Just two air raid teams firing away in Houston, including a Mike Leach team on the road from the West Coast playing in the boggy swamp of Clutch Town. That's everything I want in college football right there.
I hope Dana wears short shorts to that game.
I mean, it really depends on what happened the night before.
I forgot to pack my short shorts.
So that's not an okay reason to be nude, Dana.
Tell me an okay one.
By the way, good news for Wazoo, Northern Colorado is very bad. Wait, is that bad news? That's bad news because you want to lose to them.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, they lost to Portland State one year when Portland State was like a 4-win FCS team.
Well, they will beat North Carolina, Northern Colorado.
So if they lose to Northern Colorado, my money's all in on them like beating Stanford and Washington.
That's national championship.
National, yeah, that's first national champion to ever lose to an FCS team early in the season. That's right, Washington State. I believe next on our schedule, I have. Let's see, Texas A&M. Oh, man, with their beautiful houses and their pretty dogs.
Okay, I kind of wish that we had ordered this a little bit differently because I, too, want to spend most of this time talking about a punter. Because when I think of A&M fairly or not fairly, I think about the September Heisman. And this year for the September Heisman, on my September Heisman watch list, I want to nominate Braden Mann, last year's Ray Guy winner, who has either two first names or two last names, depending on how Texan or how Georgian you are.
Man Brady. Yeah.
He's a Mega Man character.
Anyway, Brady let's do we have a Ray? Do we have a cross divisional Ray Guy fight?
We do.
Heading up in the Reds.
Yeah, my money's on the Aussie.
Yeah, and apart from playing in the SEC West, which I'm told is not a thing you want to do, can't relate. The schedule is deeply unchill. The Aggies go to Clemson in week two. They have road games at Georgia and LSU to end the season. There's a reason I'm focusing on the punter. No, this is actually going to be funny because they might be markedly better in 2019, but the schedule may obscure that. Hmm. And if there's one thing we know about both Jimbo and College Station, it's that these developments will be taken in stride.
Did we pay you all that money to go there? Actually, you did. This was decided years before I ever got here. We sure?
But yeah, you're keeping academics up, right? Yeah, sure. Whatever you say.
This is quite arguably the hardest schedule in the country. I hear you, South Carolina fans. You have basically the same schedule. You both have to play a lot of SEC teams and Clemson. Unfortunately, this is also the reason South Carolina did not make the cut for the Red Conference, is you are basically just poor man's Texas A&M. And literally, that you are poor man's Texas A&M. You are not as rich as them.
Also, South Carolina's true color is gray camo. So,
yeah, you told us this.
Tactical red.
Just tell Jimbo Fisher that this blowtorch of a schedule is some kind of expensive facial and he'll do it.
Fimbo Jisher.
At the spa, you just put your face right in it. Just flames. Just get it all over there.
What does a Texas A&M spa consist of? Just like Reveille come up and just lick you all over?
You keep your pants on. That's step one. Yeah.
One side's for men. The other side's for horses.
Oh my God, did we just invent the horse spa?
Horse spa.
This after last week when we invented performance whiskey.
Yeah.
Horsespa.biz. Floyd, if you're listening to this, please register that.
That's the other one. It has relaxing music, right? With just faint hints. It has the like music they always play.
Spa. There are horse spas.
Yes.
Equine Aqua Spa Center.
Yes. So it's just, you know, it has the same whooshing music as
human and horse spa in the world. Well, I fucking hope so.
I'm just picturing a horse sticking its entire face in the big gallon jug of cucumber water.
You let it drink. It's just doing what comes
naturally. Bessie's thirsty after a long ride to the spa.
2 climate-controlled barns, an indoor 6-panel walker, whatever that is, and a 105-foot equine swim lane. Hot damn.
Oh, that's Jimbo's house.
Spencer would die of that in a minute.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Between horses and swimming, you are fucked.
No, he'd be riding a horse in the water. I am fine with horses.
Thank you very much. And I can't swim.
No, I mean, your short little legs are going to doom swim. You from both of these things.
That's true. Just be me, like, in the middle of it with my horse swimming and on top of it going, "Woo, I'm in Lonesome Dove."
Oh, okay. You can tell which treatments are for horses and which treatments are for people because the people treatments are all on the second floor. I am not comfortable with this blanket assertion that horses can't climb stairs. Have you fuckers not seen Wild Hearts Can't Be Broken?
Let's say this.
Answer the question.
I have seen it. It's a great film. And it's story about the indomitable spirit of horse and human. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And also about how, like, really there was not
Wait,
that much...
this is clearly a cow in the swimming pool. That is in no way a horse.
That's false advertising.
Okay.
That's a cow, right?
They got a longhorn in my Aggie spa?
Look, here's all I want to say. If Texas A&M...
sipping now.
If Texas A&M does not open the world's second... human horse spa, they're not serious about recruiting.
And no, I found a picture of the horse in the pool, and this horse looks panicked as hell. Like, I feel real bad because horses are real dumb, and oh man, why would you put a horse through this?
Looks like Jimbo at that press conference.
Oh, it kind of does.
What did I get myself into?
Saw off with me. I'm a horse. I can't hold a saw.
I don't even know what I'm sawing off, but I got on the plane.
Only thing I saw was dollar signs.
I think if A&M went 9-3, that'd be an amazing season
against
given that
this
schedule.
Yeah.
You'd be real happy with that.
I think it's deeply hilarious that these A&M, I love y'all. I love y'all, but belly aching and self martyring are like 300 level courses at your school, and I just think it's going to be really funny to watch y'all scrambling over one another to climb up on the nearest cross when you might actually have reason to.
After their last bye week, the last 3 games go in order. Home versus South Carolina, the most dangerous kind of South Carolina, on the road, probably with like 4 wins at that point. Desperate,
Will
angry.
Muschamp versus Jimbo Fisher.
Furious that they couldn't get into the horse spa, that they were turned away.
Like
Will Muschamp just rested and healthy at the end of the season because he doesn't know any better not to be, not unlike a horse.
Mm-hmm. Like a one-eyed badger that got into your shed. It's been there for hours, it's hot, and it's hungry. And guess what? You got to get the mower out of there. Good luck.
And you're covered in peanut butter.
Typical weekend for an Aggie.
Oh, then, I was talking about Will Muschamp.
Well, that too. Then the second...
What would you feel? Do you think if you filled a Kong with like tobacco dip and just threw it on the sideline at Will Muschamp, you could get him to run onto the field and get a sideline infraction?
It's like, I'm
Yeah, because Will Muschamp's usually so calm on the sideline.
I'm not playing
no,
that
I'm just
game.
Like, could you get him to chase a dog Kong? You know what a Kong is? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
If you filled one with dip and just threw it in the middle of the field, could you get him to chase it? If you dangle it and wave it in front of his nose so he can smell it and then throw it.
Holly, I think if you've shown a laser pointer on the field, he'd chase it.
Mm. Someone's done it before.
No, he would just yell sniper and start tackling people to the ground.
I'm telling you, Jimbo Fisher coached with him.
Oh,
he's
shit.
Done this before.
I really should not have brought up snipers given A&M's involvement in this game.
Boy.
And I,
oh,
Ryan,
boy.
You're my lawyer, so I'm not liable.
The next week is at Georgia, and the next week is at LSU. The end to their season is the worst 3-week stretch imaginable.
On the bright side, A&M goes to Georgia.
I mean, all of their 3-week stretches are bad. They play Clemson in week 2. Like,
yeah,
this is all terrible. The Aggies, their win total over under was 7 at one point in the offseason. This is a team with like 9 or 10 win talent, but if you win 7, you did awesome.
I will say, they're probably going to fuck somebody up bad in a bowl game.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, they're going to get vastly overmatched, land in some bullshit tax slayer situation, and just wreck, I don't know, Penn State?
Mm-hmm. Thus setting up what? National title aspirations for next year.
And so the cycle of life is reborn.
If Jimbo Fisher and James Franklin got into a passive aggressive church biddy off, whose white gloves come out unbloodied?
I'm going to go ahead and guess James Franklin at this point, because James Franklin will just get flustered.
Yeah, he'll swing and miss.
Yeah.
I do declare.
I mean, he coached at Vanderbilt. Mm. Yeah. Those gloves are staying clean. Mm. Next up in the dark red division, the scab red division, we've got Oklahoma. Hey, guess what, Oklahoma? I got good news and bad news. Bad news is you got to fix your defense. The good news is
you get to do it without Mike Stoops this time.
Yeah, you get to do it without Mike Stoops.
I miss him so much. He's the best part of watching that team.
This is how good Kyler Murray and that offense was last year.
Also, he's pretty good.
They lost two games by a combined 12 points. That's it. Remember how bad they were? Remember that they lost to Army 28-21 with Army almost beating them and holding the ball for, I want to say, 73 minutes out of 60 in regulation? Felt like that. Yeah, like as bad as they were on defense, as I think 119th overall in terms of defense, they still only lost two games and only lost them by 12 points. Now, another addition of good news, bad news, you lost Kyler Murray, the Heisman winner and outstanding quarterback who got you all those points. The good news, you have Jalen Hurts, transfer from Alabama, as seasoned a starter as one can imagine at the highest levels, with the most pressure coming off of an outstanding spot relief job for Alabama. Now, is this going to be the same offense? No, it's not going to be the same. It can't, because Jalen Hurts isn't close to the passer Kyler Murray is and will not. But honestly, with Lincoln Riley and with Trey Sermon in the run game and with an offensive line that returns, I believe, one starter, but they're all really solid and got a fair amount of snaps last year and are all really highly touted recruits. You know, they may not be super explosive early, but with any improvement on defense and a slightly less frenetic pace on offense, then
boring.
Yeah. No, there. Thank you. That was good.
Can I tee you up your transition here?
Yeah.
Do you know where Mike Stoops is now?
Oh God, he's behind you.
Is he in the
This is a lie. He can't sneak up on you.
Is he in the XFL?
He's not. Spencer, who's the last team in your division?
Do you really not know where he is right now?
No,
I can tell you.
I had no idea.
Oh, he's gone home to Papa Saban's school for wayward boys. He's a Bama analyst.
Oh no.
I love it because it's like Nick Saban's greatest project yet. It's sort of like where the property
know he has him in a muzzle, like a not a Hannibal Lecter muzzle, like a dog muzzle.
It's important to think of Nick Saban as like the bar rescue of college football, and this
only this summer he's just click training Mike Stoops.
this is the one where he's like, oh boy, the whole bar is made out of flies. This is a problem. I'm shutting down Mike Stoops.
Can Mike Stoops go a whole day of fall camp with a milk bone balanced on his nose?
Yes. Yes. I have faith that he can do that.
Can't stand still.
Yeah, he'd have to stand still, you know. By the way, their road schedule, it's the exact opposite of like Texas A&M's. they're like, oh, Big 12 teammate, former teammate. It's, yeah, sorry about that, because when you get both Kansases on the road and UCLA.
Kansai.
Yeah, you get the Kansases.
Kansai.
The Kansai. Yeah, you're good, man. And that, and you know, a UCLA in September. Oh, and yeah, you get Oklahoma State at the end of the year. Because remember, that's not really a rivalry. It's not in terms of like outcomes, because Oklahoma usually wins that game, like almost always. Like to the point where you probably could bet a mortgage payment on it safely.
It is Bedlam. Bedlam is an accurate name, but it is Bedlam in the sense of like the Roadrunner versus Wile E. Coyote. The path to destruction is colorful and frequently unexpected. The winner is not.
Right.
Yeah. That leaves our last team, which would be Alabama.
Little known red football enthusiasts, Alabama.
Yeah.
Red Tide.
The red tide. The red tide.
Bad for the environment. Can't really stop it.
We'll ruin your clams.
Made mostly, yeah.
Metaphorically and literally.
Bad for the Gulf states.
Uniformly, man. Well, what can one say about Alabama but this? Nick Saban hired temps. He just hired temps. That's all he's got. He's getting so, like, he brought Mike Stoops in as an analyst. Does anyone know their offensive coordinator?
It's Sark, isn't it?
Yeah. Steve Sarkisian.
Shit.
Yeah. Rolling back in. You know?
Man, that's a fucking when ships pass in the night in the Holiday Inn Express or wherever the hell they're living.
He coached the game.
God, Kyle Flood is on this staff.
Kyle Flood is on this staff. Who else? Pete Golding. You know who Pete Golding is? No one does. He's the defensive coordinator now.
Sure.
Shut up and read what's on the card. Just shut up and read what's on the card. I'm Kyle Flood and I have thoughts. No, you don't. Nick gave you your script today. Read it. Follow
Even
it to the
Floods
minute.
Floods have to bow to the tide.
I don't King get me. It. I don't get it.
King me.
I don't get it.
I know, baby.
I love that. Like, who's got the most experience on this staff? A dude who coached one game with us. One.
How'd it go?
I mean, this fine. This lack of continuity on the staff definitely has not come back to bite them recently, so I wouldn't worry about it.
Nothing else matters, by the way. Like, oh, wow, they got a lot of turnover on defense. Who cares? It's fine. They're all 4 and 5 stars. Nick Saban's coaching them. He's handing out little, like, index cards to tell everybody what to do every single day. They almost won the national title last year. Clemson had to go, like, 8 of 11 on long third downs to beat them.
But don't worry. They've got Kyle Flood and Mike Stoops.
All their receivers are back. It doesn't matter. He could put us up there.
He should, frankly.
I'm going to go ahead and say at some point it does matter.
No.
It does matter. Look what happened. Okay.
Yeah.
Can we count up who among us on this podcast is and is not of the opinion that staff continuity played a large part into specifically the fact that the staff all had one foot out the door? Played a large part in Bama's fate in last year's conference championship game.
A national championship, you mean?
Whatever.
Okay, sure. Because I like the idea that you're saying, like, oh, Bama only barely beat Georgia because they weren't really paying attention, but they still beat Georgia.
I mean... Anyway, yes, national championship game.
Yeah. I don't... I mean... Clemson hit an astonishing gamble, right?
Mm-hmm.
They hit a moonshot against a cornerback who couldn't cover one guy.
Listen, I'm going to do a thing we never do, and I'm going to suggest you go listen to PAPN and listen to Godfrey talk about the people he's talked to on that staff about what it was like in the run up to the title game last year with everybody getting ready to head off to a new job. And how that creates little glitches in the machine and ask themselves if they're setting up for something similar this year. I mean, by God, they might only win 12 games.
I think the most unintentionally cruel thing we've ever done on this show is wait until PAPN went into shutdown.
Well, now it's safe.
To
right?
tell people to go listen to it.
No, we appreciate historical artifacts all the time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like Oklahoma football.
Can I take this as an opportunity, by the way? Before we wrap this up, I want to just go ahead and shout out Dan Enos. Dan Enos.
What's wrong with him? Did he get a new job?
Yeah, no. He's quarterback, all right?
Is he still on Bama staff?
No, he's not.
Where is he?
He ghosted.
What team of Chris drivers is he upsetting this year?
Okay,
he's at the U this year.
All right, so I'm referring to former Alabama quarterback coach Dan Enos. Previously,
I forgot that's what Dan Enos's face looks like.
Yep, former Central Michigan coach, former Arkansas offensive coach.
You know the Matt Damon puppet in the Team America movie?
That's what Dan Enos looks like.
Yeah.
Dan Enos.
Like he's par-baked. He might need to go back in the oven.
Yeah. Well, you know what? He was certainly unfinished at Bama.
Yeah.
Because everyone else who leaves that job, remember like Kirby Smart? Like it was always like, man, Kirby's going to go. And it was like Kirby Smart was locked in a basement until the absolute moment that, you know, like the last possible moment. he got free. And even then, I'm sure he probably was like, Nick, I'll send that to you once I get to Georgia. It's on a flash drive. I'll send it to you. Okay. He left with work done, right? Nobody could leave Alabama without a lengthy process of vetting and clearance by Nick Saban.
This sort
of,
Lane Kiffin could.
This started to break down with the Lane Kiffin departure. Pioneer in all things, Lane Kiffin.
It turns out wearing a sleep shirt to film study, good way to go ahead and be invited to leave.
Yeah, yeah. And that's when the etiquette started to break down. But, you know, we thought like Lane Kiffin was kind of a bad boy for defying Nick Saban and having a sloppy exit from the Alabama football program. Nope. He was the title holder. He no longer is.
Oh, I forgot about this.
Yeah, Dan Enos, the quarterback's coach.
So did Dan Enos.
Dan Enos ghosted Saban. Just left. Just took off.
I didn't want to tell my dad that I wrecked the car.
I'm not coming home.
I put Pop Chevelle into a tree.
Like, he's disputed this report, and that's fine. But as far as I'm concerned, the account where they have a meeting and somebody goes, where's Dan? And they're like, oh, he's in Miami at his new job with his new family. That's the funniest imaginable outcome. And I'm just, that's what actually happened. You can dispute it all you want.
To be clear, that will be my first reaction if Bama loses a game this year. Just to tweet, where's Dan, repeatedly.
God, can Nick Saban win without Dan Enos' players?
We'll find out when they open the season against
I'm Duke. Super glad that this episode is dropping when at least three of us are going to be on vacation.
We're ghosted. Bye.
Bye, y'all. Dan Enos Hive, out.